second section for recitation. Then the Blessed One spoke to the Venerable Ananda. "Come, Ananda, we shall move on to the village of Koti." "Yes, sir," replied the Venerable Ananda to the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One made his way with a large community of monks to the village of Koti. While he was staying there, he addressed the monks. "Monks, it is because of not understanding, not penetrating the four noble truths, that both you and I have run and wandered the round of rebirth in this way for such a long time." "Which four?" "It is because of not understanding, not penetrating the noble truth of suffering, of the arising of suffering, of the cessation of suffering, of the practice leading to the cessation of suffering, that both you and I have run and wandered the round of rebirth for such a long time. But once the noble truth that this is suffering is understood and penetrated, once the noble truth of the arising of suffering is understood and penetrated, once the noble truth of the cessation of suffering is understood and penetrated, once the noble truth of the practice leading to the cessation of suffering is understood and penetrated, then craving for existence is cut off, the conductor of existence is destroyed, and no longer is there rebirth." This is what the Blessed One said. And when the Happy One had said this, the teacher spoke again. "Through not truly seeing four realities as do the noble ones, one journeys a long time through various births. But when they are seen, the conductor of existence is removed, the root of suffering is cut, and no longer is there rebirth." Now, while he was staying at the village of Koti, the Blessed One talked to the monks a lot about the teaching in these terms. He explained how it is with good conduct, how it is with concentration, how it is with wisdom, how concentration that is invested with good conduct is of great fruit and of great benefit, how wisdom that is invested with concentration is of great fruit and of great benefit, and how the mind that is invested with wisdom is fully released from the taints, namely the taint of sense desire, the taint of being, the taint of view, the taint of ignorance. Now, when the Blessed One had stayed at the village of Koti as long as he wanted, he spoke to the Venerable Ananda. "Come, Ananda, we shall move on to Nardika." "Yes, sir," replied the Venerable Ananda to the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One made his way with a large community of monks to Nardika, where he stayed in the brick house. Then Ananda approached him, and having saluted him respectfully, sat down to one side. Once seated, he said to the Blessed One, "Sir, the monk Salha has died in Nardika. What is his destiny? What is his fate?" "The nun Nanda has died in Nardika. What is her destiny? What is her fate?" "The layman Sudita has died in Nardika. What is his destiny? What is his fate?" "The laywoman Sujata has died in Nardika. What is her destiny? What is her fate?" "The layman Kakutha, Kalinga, Nikata, Katisaba, Tuta, Santuta, Badda, Subhasa have died in Nardika. What is their destiny? What is their fate?" "Ananda, the monk Salha, by destroying the taints, lived here in this world, having experienced and attained for himself through direct knowledge the freedom of mind and wisdom that is without taints. The nun, Nanda, by completely destroying the five lower fetters, is someone who is reborn purely, who will attain final nibbana in that world and will not return from there. The layman, Sudita, by completely destroying three fetters and by weakening greed, hatred and delusion, is someone who returns once. Having returned once to this world, he will make an end of suffering. The laywoman Sujata, by completely destroying three fetters, is someone who has entered the stream and is beyond affliction, destined to full awakening for sure. The layman Kakutha, Kalinga, Nikata, Katisaba, tutta, santutta, baddha, subhasa, by completely destroying the five lower fetters, are those who are reborn purely, who will attain final nibbana in that world and will not return from there. Ananda, a further 50 lay followers who have died in Nardika have, by completely destroying the five lower fetters, become those who are reborn purely, who will attain final nibbana there and will not return from that world. Over 90 lay followers who have died in Nardika have, by completely destroying three fetters and by weakening greed, hatred and delusion, become those who return once. Having returned once to this world, they will make an end of suffering. More than 500 lay followers who have died in Nardika have, by completely destroying three fetters, become those who have entered the stream and are beyond affliction, destined to full awakening for sure. Now, that human beings should die is not out of the ordinary, Ananda. But if you are going to come to the Tathagata and ask him this question every time someone should die, that will be a nuisance to him. So I shall teach you a way of truth called the Mirror of Truth. With this, the noble disciple who wishes could by himself describe himself as having finished with birth in hell as an animal or a ghost, as having finished with misfortune, unhappy destinies, and affliction, as someone who has entered the stream and is beyond affliction, destined to full awakening for sure. What, Ananda, is the mirror of truth, the way of truth, with which the noble disciple who wishes could by himself describe himself? In this connection, a noble disciple has confidence in the Buddha because he knows that he is the Blessed One, in that he is an Arahat, a perfect Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, happy, one who understands the world, the unsurpassed charioteer of men to be tamed, the teacher of gods and men, a blessed Buddha. He has confidence in the truth because he knows that the truth that is clear, immediate, accessible, practical, and that one who is discerning can come to know for himself, has been well explained by the Blessed One. He has confidence in the community because he knows that the community of the Blessed One, consisting of the eight persons in four pairs, conducts itself well, honestly, skillfully, and properly, that it is a community deserving of offerings, hospitality, presence, and respect, an unsurpassed field of merit for the world. He possesses ways of conduct that are dear to the noble ones, of the kind that are unbroken, without defect, unblemished, without flaw, clear, praised by the discerning, untarnished, and conducive to concentration. This, Ananda, is the mirror of truth, the way of truth with which the noble disciple who wishes could by himself describe himself. Now, while he was staying at Nardika, the Blessed One talked to the monks a lot about the teaching in these terms. He explained how it is with good conduct, how it is with concentration, how it is with wisdom, how concentration that is invested with good conduct is of great fruit and of great benefit, how wisdom that is invested with concentration is of great fruit and of great benefit, and how the mind that is invested with wisdom is fully released from the taints, namely, the taint of sense desire, the taint of being, the taint of view, the taint of ignorance. Now when the Blessed One had stayed at Nardika as long as he wanted, he spoke to the Venerable Ananda. Come, Ananda, we shall move on to Vesali. Yes, sir, replied the Venerable Ananda to the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One made his way with a large community of monks to Vesali, where he stayed in Ambapali's grove. There the Blessed One addressed the monks. A monk should live mindfully, with full awareness. This is my instruction to you. How does a monk live mindfully? In this case, a monk lives watching the body as body. He is determined, fully aware, mindful, overcoming his longing for and discontent with the world. He lives watching feelings as feelings. He is determined, fully aware, mindful, overcoming his longing for and discontent with the world. He lives watching mind as mind. He is determined, fully aware, mindful, overcoming his longing for and discontent with the world. He lives watching qualities as qualities. He is determined, fully aware, mindful, overcoming his longing for and discontent with the world. It is in this way that a monk lives mindfully. How does a monk live with full awareness? In moving forward and turning back, a monk acts with full awareness. In looking ahead and looking around, he acts with full awareness. In bending and straightening his limbs, he acts with full awareness. In wearing his inner and outer robes and carrying his alms bowl, he acts with full awareness. In eating, drinking, chewing and swallowing, he acts with full awareness. In defecating and urinating, he acts with full awareness. In walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, speaking and keeping silent, he acts with full awareness. It is in this way that a monk lives with full awareness. A monk should live mindfully, with full awareness. This is my instruction to you. Now, when the courtesan Ambapali heard people say that the Blessed One had reached Vesali and was staying in her mango grove, she had the best carriages harnessed, and mounting one, she drove out of Vesali in a cortege of carriages and set off for the park. When she had gone by carriage as far as the ground would allow, she dismounted and approached the Blessed One on foot. Having approached, she saluted the Blessed One respectfully and exchanged pleasing and polite words with him before sitting down to one side. Once Ambapali was seated, the Blessed One instructed her with talk about the teaching, encouraging, enthusing, and inspiring her. Instructed, encouraged, enthused, and inspired by his talk, she said to the Blessed One, "May the Blessed One, along with the community of monks, accept my invitation for tomorrow's meal." By his silence, the Blessed One accepted. Understanding that he had accepted her invitation, Ambapali got up from her seat, respectfully saluted the Blessed One, and left, keeping him on her right. Now when the Lichavis of Vesali heard people say that the Blessed One had reached Vesali and was staying in Ambapali's grove, they had the best carriages harnessed, and mounting them, they drove out of Vesali in a cortege of carriages. Some of these Lichavis were in blue, made up in blue, dressed in blue, and adorned with blue. Some were in yellow, made up in yellow, dressed in yellow, and adorned with yellow. Some were in red, made up in red, dressed in red, and adorned with red. Some were in white, made up in white, dressed in white, and adorned with white. And when the courtesan Ambapali came past, scraping the young Lichavis' axles, wheels, and yokes with hers, the Lichavis asked her, "Ambapali, how come you are scraping past the young Lichavis like this?" "Because, young men, I have just invited the Blessed One and the community of monks for tomorrow's meal." "Ambapali, give up this meal for 100,000 pieces. "Young men, even if you were to give me Vesali and its countryside, I would not give up a meal of this importance." Then the Lichavis snapped their fingers. "We've been outdone by the mango girl. We've been cheated by the mango girl." Then the Lichavis went on to Ambapali's grove. When the Blessed One saw the Lichavis coming in the distance, he said to the monks, "Any monks who have never seen the gods of the 33 should just look at this group of Lichavis. Gaze on it and focus on it as though it were the assembly of the 33. When the Lichavis had gone by carriage as far as the ground would allow, they dismounted and approached the Blessed One on foot. Having approached, they saluted the Blessed One respectfully and exchanged pleasing and polite words with him before sitting down to one side. When they were seated, the Blessed One instructed the Lichavese with talk about the teaching, encouraging, enthusing, and inspiring them. Instructed, encouraged, enthused, and inspired by his talk, they said to the Blessed One, "May the Blessed One, along with the community of monks, accept our invitation for tomorrow's meal." Lichavese, "I have accepted the courtesan Ambapali's invitation for tomorrow's meal." Then the Lichavese snapped their fingers. "We've been outdone by the mango girl. We've been cheated by the mango girl." When the Lichavese had enjoyed and expressed their appreciation of what the Blessed One said, they got up from their seats, respectfully saluted the Blessed One and left, keeping him on their right. When the night was over, Ambapali had fine foods of different sorts prepared in her own park. Then she had the Blessed One informed, "It is time, sir. The meal is ready." Then, early in the morning, the Blessed One put on his outer robes and, taking his bowl, went together with a community of monks to where the meal was being served and sat down on the prepared seat. Then Ambapali, the courtesan, waited on the Blessed One and the community of monks, serving them with the fine foods with her own hands. And when the Blessed One had finished eating and washed his hands and bowl, she brought a low seat and sat down to one side. Once seated, she said to the Blessed One, "Sir, I am giving this park to the Buddha and his community of monks." The Blessed One accepted the park, and then, after he had instructed Ambapali with talk about the teaching, encouraging, enthusing, and inspiring her, he left. Now, while he was staying at Vasali in Ambapali's grove, the Blessed One talked to the monks a lot about the teaching in these terms. He explained how it is with good conduct, how it is with concentration, how it is with wisdom, how concentration that is invested with good conduct is of great fruit and of great benefit, how wisdom that is invested with concentration is of great fruit and of great benefit, and how the mind that is invested with wisdom is fully released from the taints, namely the taint of sense desire, the taint of being, the taint of view, the taint of ignorance. Now when the Blessed One had stayed in Ambapali's grove as long as he wanted, he spoke to the Venerable Ananda, "Come, Ananda, we shall move on to the village of Beluva." "Yes, sir," replied the Venerable Ananda to the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One made his way with a large community of monks to the village of Beluva. While he was staying there, he addressed the monks. "Monks, go anywhere around Vasali, where you have friends, where you are known, where you have supporters, and enter upon the rainy season there. I will enter upon it here in the village of Beluva." "Yes, sir," replied those monks. And so they entered upon the rainy season around Vasali, and the Blessed One entered upon it in Beluva. When the Blessed One had entered upon the rainy season, he fell seriously ill, suffering severe pains as though he were close to death. Without complaining, the Blessed One accepted the pains mindfully and with full awareness. Then it occurred to the Blessed One, "It would not be right for me to reach final Nibbana without my having addressed those attending on me and having taken my leave of the community of monks. Suppose I should suppress this illness by force and live by controlling the vital energy." So the Blessed One suppressed his illness by force and lived by controlling his vital energy. And so he recovered from his illness. Soon after he had recovered, he came out from his dwelling and sat down on the prepared seat in the shade of the building. Then the Venerable Ananda came to him and sat down to one side. Once seated, he spoke to the Blessed One. "I can see that the Blessed One is comfortable. I can see that the Blessed One is bearing up. And although when the Blessed One was ill, my body seemed to be drugged, and I did not know where to turn, and things were not clear to me. Nevertheless, I had just enough confidence to feel that the Blessed One would not reach final nirvana without saying something about the community of monks. But what does the community of monks want from me, Ananda? I have taught the truth without considering who is an insider and who is an outsider. The Tathagata is not the kind of teacher who is tight-fisted with matters of truth. Surely, if there is someone who thinks that it is he who should be in charge of the community of monks, or that the community of monks is his particular concern, then it is he who should say something about the community of monks. But the Tathagata does not think that it is he who should be in charge of the community of monks, or that the community of monks is his particular concern. So why should he say something about the community of monks? I am an old and aged man, Ananda, an elder who has done his time and reached old age. I have turned 80, and just as a worn-out cart is kept going with the help of repairs, so it seems is the Tathagata's body kept going with repairs. The only time that the Tathagata can make his body comfortable is when he lives, having attained a state of mental concentration without sensation, and specific feelings cease through not paying attention to any sensations. So, Ananda, you should live with yourselves as your island of refuge, and not someone else. With the truth as your island of refuge, and not something else. And how does one live with oneself as one's island of refuge, with the truth as one's island of refuge? A monk should live mindfully, with full awareness. This is my instruction to you. How does a monk live mindfully? In this case, a monk lives watching the body as body. He is determined, fully aware, mindful, overcoming his longing for and discontent with the world. He lives watching feelings as feelings, mind as mind, qualities as qualities. He is determined, fully aware, mindful, overcoming his longing for and discontent with the world. It is in this way that a monk lives mindfully. This is how one lives with oneself as one's island of refuge, with the truth as one's island of refuge. Whoever of my monks, either now or after I have gone, live with themselves as their island of refuge and not someone else, with the truth as their island of refuge and not something else, they will be guides in the darkness, whoever are desirous of training.